Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Mark Carney served as governor of the central banks of first Canada and then the UK and was one of the people charged with reforming banking and finance after the crash of 2008 and with preparing for Brexit upheaval. He discusses the world we're in and its prospects in his new book called Values, and he joins me from the Canadian capital, Ottawa, now. Good morning, Mark, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks for having me.
First, I read that you have an Irish passport.
I do.
Tell me, how did that come about?
Well, three of my grandparents are Irish, and back in the late 1980s, when I graduated from university, I was coming over to Europe to work, and so I got my citizenship, and I've had a passport ever since.
Okay, and do you have links to Ireland? Clearly, now new ones, because you've taken on the role as board member of the company Stripe, founded by the Irish brothers Patrick and John Collison. Why did you decide to join it, though?
Well, I joined it because, and it's part of the reason why they're growing rapidly, is that they're at the intersection of a really tremendous development, which is the growth of the internet, the growth of commerce, the growth of new businesses that can be plugged in from anywhere in Ireland, anywhere in Canada, to the world. They're brilliant, brilliant business people, but very good people. I highly rate their values, from everything from sustainability to developing, progress in the true sense of the word. So I wanted to be part of it.
And for them, it has been suggested, I read in some of the commentary around your appointment, that you lend a bit of establishment heft to a young company. Do you see it that way?
Heft. That's good. That's my contribution these days. Well, I think, it's a company that, as you just said, Claire, it's grown rapidly. It's operating in over 40 countries around the world. And as companies grow, you need to develop your governance structures, and it becomes a little more formal. And, people like myself can provide some of that for them. But it's really goes to the core of their business and how it's going to develop. I think that's where we share an interest.
I know one of the many topics that you touch on in your book, Values, is Brexit. And we all watched here on this side of the sea how, in fascinated horror at times in the lead up to the vote and, of course, afterwards. And you were taken to task by Brexiteers when you suggested that Brexit could lead to recession in the UK. Do you think COVID has masked the impact of Brexit, or is it already coming to pass?
Well, it's very difficult to disentangle the impacts of COVID and Brexit. You're absolutely right, Claire. And of course, even with Brexit, there's certain of the protocols and the restrictions that ultimately will come into force that are not operating now, with respect to, for example, Northern Ireland and some of the inbound customs checks and other things in the UK. So it's difficult to disentangle, but it is what it is. And, all countries have to move forward given what has been decided.
And what will be ultimately the impact on the British economy?
Well, it's a big adjustment. It's fundamentally a big adjustment. If I may just quickly on the point on values and the preparations for Brexit, one of the things we've all been reminded in the last 12 months is the importance of resilience and preparing for difficult things that can happen. And so as much as the commentary and the actions of the Bank of England in the run-up to the votes and to the actual Brexit was to make sure that the financial system was ready for whatever could happen. And I think it's a lesson that has a much broader application.
Do you have a view on the Northern Ireland Protocol? I mean, the unionists now say it has to be scrapped because it's very damaging to the Northern Ireland economy and to its citizens.
Well, it's part of a broader agreement, so I would. it's a decision that was made. It's part of a complex agreement, and I take a view of it as a fait accompli.
Was there much discussion in the planning about Ireland, about the border on the island of Ireland? Did it feature?
Well, the work that I did was concentrated on the financial sector, and there were very close links the central bank and Pascal Donohue and others as the finance minister to make sure that we were protecting the system and therefore the ultimate goal is to protect our citizens so that at a minimum their money's safe, but also that the system would function well whatever happened. And to be honest, Claire, that occupied a tremendous amount of time to make sure that was the case. Fortunately, it wasn't fully tested by Brexit, but it was quickly tested by COVID.
I'm sure you've been keeping an eye on the vaccine row between the UK and the EU. Is that going to be a sign of how business will be done between the two from now on? It's contentious and difficult.
It is very difficult. It's disturbing. Vaccine nationalism. In the end, COVID's not over anywhere until it's over everywhere. And we need to work together as much as possible on this. And I'm hoping that it's going to be diffused in all aspects. I'm joining you from Canada, as you said at the outset, and we're well behind both of you in terms of vaccinations, and candidly, we're relying on vaccine production largely offshore, and so we need to be able to rely on those partners. I hope that this situation comes to a reasonable conclusion very, very quickly.
Your book, as I said, is called Values, and the S at the end is in brackets or parentheses. Yes. Your thesis is that we've lost our values, is it, in the race to put a value on everything?
Well, the thesis is twofold. The more pessimistic aspect is that, and we saw that with the financial crisis, where emphasis on market values and financial values undercut the values of the market and ultimately paid a huge price, and of course, nowhere more so than in Ireland. But the more positive aspect is if we elevate our values, for example, on climate and at getting to net zero, then we can harness the power of the market, which is what's happening now in the run-up to the Glasgow summit. So it's within our hands, our collective hands. What do we value? We get what we value, in essence, Claire. And let's decide where we want to go, whether it's with sustainability or with the new digital economy that we were talking about with Stripe.
You, though, this is coming from you who operate in this world of high finance prior to your public service careers. And the job of the world of high finance, isn't it, is to put a value on everything.
Yes, and there are things that can be valued and should be valued and should be valued appropriately, but they need to try to take into account other factors. So factors such as sustainability, impact on biodiversity, impact on communities, and that's something that sort of ESG focus has come increasingly to the fore. And it was an error of finance, and it was an error of the broader system to not take those factors into account. Once they do, though, then you see, and we're seeing it now, we're just seeing the start, in my judgment, of a huge wave of investing towards sustainability, which will get us down the road towards that goal. It won't solve everything. We need government, we need people, but finance can be part of the solution.
Do you say it presents a way for companies to make money from doing good?
Increasingly it does, and in fact it ignoring the problem and therefore being part of the problem is a good way for companies to lose money over time.
Is that not just capitalism flourishing again, though?
Well, again, it's a question of whether it's in service of values. And so Ireland, the UK, Canada, 127 other countries, soon to be joined by the US, have put this value on sustainability explicitly, having an objective of getting to net zero. And therefore, there's a lens to look at businesses, and candidly, whatever savings we have, whether it's in a building society, a pension pod, an insurance company, etc., look at that and say, well, is that aligned? Is that company working towards net zero? Does it have a plan? Is my money being invested or lent out in a way that's consistent with that? And if not, why not? And can I move it to a situation that is aligned with it? And that is a dynamic that puts resources behind those who are part of the solution and takes it away from those who are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Trusting capitalism and companies, though, to be part of the solution might be a dangerous thing to do. Naomi Klein said the idea that capitalism can save the planet is dangerous at this stage of history because we're talking about a track record.
Well, I think again, it goes to the point of in what direction are we channeling capitalism? I'm not suggesting that unfettered in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I'm suggesting the exact opposite. I'm not suggesting unfettered capitalism, market fundamentalism is going to save the planet. Absolutely not. But once society comes together, as it has in the European Union, in the UK, Canada, elsewhere, and says, we have this clear objective, it's in law, it's net zero, we're putting in place the regulations and the rules that support that. Consumer preferences are changing. You see the way, and there's transparency around, again, as I say, who's part of the solution, who's part of the problem. Then the market, you see these huge shifts, and this is what's been happening over the course of the last 18 months, is huge shifts in investment towards sustainability. Now, that needs to persist for decades in order for us to ultimately get to the objective. But we do need the market system in order to get there, because in the end, Claire, we need trillions of euros of investment every year in order to accomplish this goal.
And how do we avoid or guard against greenwashing, the rebranding of companies or products as green very cheaply, just to cash in on this desire to save the planet? Because that's the money-driven response, isn't it?
Well, we have to have scrutiny, we have to have standards. So one of the things that we're working for COP26 is to make it mandatory, the type of disclosure that companies make around not just their carbon footprint today, but where they expect it to be tomorrow and their strategies around that. So instead of having voluntary standards, which what is in place today everywhere, that we have legislated standards put in place by the regulators. We've just had a breakthrough with something called the IFRS, which is the governs the disclosure standards for 140 countries, including ours, and that's what needs to happen, and we need to push that through. The European Union has been leading on this. The UK as well has announced that it will legislate for this type of disclosure. So we get that. That's how you guard against it. But that's a necessary condition for guarding against it. But the second thing, Claire, is that you have to, financial institutions and all of us have to look at this information and judge who's doing the right thing.
Is it your contention that a similar crash compared to the one that happened in 2008 could never happen again?
Oh, I would never say never in finance. And in fact, the exact opposite. It's that sort of thinking. I'm not suggesting that's what you think, but it's that sort of thinking that leads to those problems. You have to plan for failure, whether you're a central banker or a financial institution or an individual investor. Think about what can go wrong. What would happen to you if it goes wrong? How do you protect yourself? How can you be resilient to those types of outcomes? We think we have changed the system quite substantially so that if there is a big shock, the big institutions don't run directly to the state, but they bear the consequences of that. In other words, they're no longer too big to fail, and we all lived through the problems of too big to fail banks in 2008. And also the individuals bear the consequences of their actions. So we've done a number of things in order to do that, but that is not the same thing as saying that there won't be excesses and potentially crashes in finance down the road. There have been over the course of the last eight centuries, and I would expect another one at some point.
Mark, thank you very much for joining us. Your book is out now, Values by Mark Carney, and it's published by HarperCollins.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you, Claire.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.